And hello, thank you so much. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and we're happy to have you right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. One of the things we love about Progressive Radio Network is you can join us every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, or anytime on the archives. Just go to prn.fm archives. And once you do that, you will see a list of all of the wonderful informative programming that you can listen to right here on Progressive Radio Network, including our show, which is The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can go down in the archives to the end section and look for Natural Nurse. We'd like to announce many of our upcoming lectures that are going on all over the place, especially in the summer, because we're outside gathering edible and medicinal plants and making them into medicine, such as extracts and tinctures and salves. And you can learn how by several ways. One is take a look at our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. You can find that at naturalnurse.com under books, or go to naturalnurse.com under schedules to find where local classes are in your area, or go to naturalnurse.com under education to see how you can take any of the classes that we teach virtually online and get a certification. We also have a 5 CEU college credit program going on October 4th, which is coordinated between Stony Brook University, where I am a clinical instructor, and Bridgeport University, where our co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, is a professor. And we put on a conference which is actually open to the public, although it's geared towards health professionals in terms of the language that's used and the evidence base of the natural therapies that are being presented. So that's going to be October 4th. And it's in Southampton if you want to go out there, enjoy the weekend, and get 5 credits at the same time. So you can find out about all of that at naturalnurse.com. Today we are very happy to have as our guest Dr. Christine Horner. And Dr. Christine Horner is nationally known surgeon, professional speaker, and author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Horner, Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. And we have had her on in the past discussing other topics. Dr. Horner holds 2 board certifications, the National Board of Surgery and the National Board of Plastic Surgery. And she was recognized as a leader in her field shortly after starting her plastic and reconstructive surgery practice because she successfully ran a national campaign to pass laws requiring insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction surgery following mastectomy. So she is certainly a mastectomy expert. And on today's show, Dr. Horner discusses the option of mastectomy for women with genetic markers for the possibility of developing breast cancer, because this has become an issue very prominent in the news due to the participation in this procedure by Angelina Jolie. So she's going to discuss what her thoughts are about using that kind of surgery as a prevention against breast cancer, even when you know that you have a specific genetic marker, which is the BRCA1, breast cancer type 1 susceptibility protein. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Horner.
Having me back, it's always great to be on your show.
And, you know, I'm very happy to have you, too, because I was very stunned, not by the fact that Angelina Jolie made this decision. That's her private decision, whether or not you and I agree with it, and I'm so looking forward to your input as an expert. But the fact that when they promoted it so heavily in the media, that many women might have ran to have this procedure done without really knowing both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, they found that there was a big increase in the number of women that were going to their doctors asking to do the genetic testing. And the thing that's really important for women to know is that the genetic mutation that Angelina Jolie has is very rare. So it's in less than 1% of the population. So more than 99% of us do not have the BRCA1 gene mutation. the only people that should be interested in having genetic testing done would be if you have a mother, sister, aunt, you know, lots and lots of relatives in your close family that have been diagnosed with either breast or ovarian cancer at a young age. So that would be the thing that would give you some suspicion that maybe you might have that genetic defect. And even if you have that, you know, there's all sorts of things that are ramifications of getting the genetic testing, and it's not something that you go into lightly, and it is something that we highly recommend that you meet with a genetic counselor to go over all the different implications and what it means and everything, you know, before you would have that kind of testing done.
Well, I want to go into that a little bit, because the fact is, now, you're saying that there could be problems because you can get false positives, but it's not like genetic testing is like an X-ray or even a CAT scan or an MRI. In other words, going through the procedure itself really does not have any kind of downside, does it?
No, it's just a blood test, you know, so
exactly.
There's no, you know, side effects to it. The downsides, I would say, is that, you know, what do you do, you know, when you get that genetic, you know, testing done? So now you're looking at, okay, do I, you know, I have all these decisions to make, you know, regarding that. And then, you know, there's insurance issues, like, you know, our beloved insurance companies love to do pre-existing conditions. And so now are they going to say, well, because you tested positive for this, we're not going to cover you? You know,
oh,
something
that's
happens.
Very thick. Oh, my goodness. But I think,
yeah,
according,
you know,
to the new healthcare laws, they can't do that, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah. We're hoping. You know, you never know what those those people are doing in Washington, but, you know, hopefully. But that has been, you know, the situation in the past, or, you know, even for disability insurance. And I remember when I was, as a plastic surgeon, getting disability insurance, my mother had died of breast cancer. And because my mother died of breast cancer, they wanted to put a clause in there that if I ever got breast cancer, they wouldn't cover me for disability. So, you know, nobody wants to pay for anything in the insurance industry, and so they try all sorts of, you know, crazy things. But anyway, it's just, you know, there's more than what meets the eye on the surface of it as far as all the things that you need to consider when you have genetic testing done.
Wow, that's true. However, if somebody did want to get the testing done, that's one thing. But there's another whole issue in terms of the fact that there is a lot of science, and I quoted it in an article that I published widely on the web, in terms of specific tests, specific interventions, natural interventions, that
uh-huh.
can be used even on people who are known carriers with excellent
Correct.
Outcomes. Here's one. Suppression
yeah.
of breast cancer
uh-huh.
invasion and migration by indole-3-carbinol associated
uh-huh.
with upregulation of BRCA1.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, the excellent point with it. So, you know, if you are diagnosed with a BRCA1 gene mutation, now, just to distinguish, all of us have a BRCA1 gene, and it's a gene that governs tumor suppression and DNA repair. So when you have a mutation of it, then that gene doesn't function that well in tumor suppression and DNA repair, which is why it increases the risk of not only breast and ovarian cancer, but several other types of cancers as well. And so, interestingly, what the researchers have done is they looked at the BRCA1 gene families, and then they followed the family lineage back in time, 100 years, to see what the incidence of breast cancer was 100 years ago, and it was one-third of what it is today. So that should raise your eyebrows going, okay, well, why
Wait,
is that?
I want you,
you know,
to say that again, because, you know, the
okay.
fact is, this is what I love also with something like ADHD, they're saying it's genetic. But how is that
uh-huh.
possible with the increase
right.
in numbers?
Correct. Yeah. So again, you know, 100 years ago, the incidence of breast cancer in BRCA1 gene families was one-third of what it is today. So that tells us that there's things that we're doing now that are influencing the risk that were not being done before. And my book that I first wrote back in 2005 called Waking the Warrior Goddess, which means about enlivening your own body's inner healing intelligence, but it is all the research that shows statistically everything that has an influence that either we need to avoid or need to favor in order to lower our risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, and so forth. But, you know, really solid research showing that, you know, our diet, our lifestyle, nutritional supplements, our emotions, our relationships, all of these things influence our risk of developing diseases, including diseases like breast cancer, for instance. So we really have a lot of influence on what our risk is, and we can get it to a minimum by understanding what these various different food supplements, lifestyle things that are the things that you know, help to support our health best. So the interesting thing with the BRCA1 gene is now that we have mapped out the human genome, and what the research is focusing on is looking at all these different substances, foods, chemicals within foods, and then testing it to see what genes it's either activating, so it's expressing itself, or silencing, so it doesn't express itself. And so we're getting really detailed information about the genetic effects of food. So it doesn't matter necessarily what genes you're born with, because now we know that everything that we consume, even the thoughts that we think, have an effect on how our genes are read. So there's ways that we can optimally have our genes read, and this includes even if you have a BRCA1 gene mutation. So they're testing certain things, and it's, you know, there hasn't been a huge amount of data looking specifically at how certain foods and supplements and so forth affect directly the BRCA1 gene, but there has been some done that's fairly impressive. So as you mentioned, the indole-3 carbonyl, which is found in cruciferous vegetables, have a direct effect on the BRCA1 gene. Soy has a direct effect on the BRCA1 gene. Omega-3 fatty acids have a direct effect. And the most impressive study that I found was one where there was a double-blinded placebo-controlled study. So this is our golden standard. They had enough BRCA1 gene women where they did a double-blinded placebo-controlled study where they gave them selenium supplements or a placebo. And selenium is a mineral that is involved in our body's own antioxidant system, but it's also involved in our DNA repair. And what they find with women who have the BRCA1 gene mutation is the DNA repair doesn't work very well, and so they when they do blood samples, they'll find these little fragments of broken pieces of DNA. And so the percentage of them is higher than what we would see in a normal person. And so what they did was they gave, you know, the double-blinded placebo-controlled study, they gave them selenium supplements for 2 years. And after 2 years, they found that the women who were taking selenium supplements with the BRCA1 gene mutation had a 200% lower incidence of breast cancer within 2 years. And when they looked at their blood, the DNA fragments, the percentage were back down to normal. So it's like, wow, we can just do selenium supplements. You can have that kind of an impact. So this gives women a different option than just going to surgery. It allows women to know that we have a lot of control over the expression of that gene. Even if you have it, that mutation of it, you can reduce your risks, because here we had it to one-third, you know, 100 years ago. Well, we can get there and probably more, because we're understanding genetically more what to do as far as with nutritional supplements. And so you can really get your risk down to way less than 30%, 20% or something, which means you have an 80% chance of not getting it. And so it gives women a viable option of not having surgery done, you know, if they're willing to do all the diet and lifestyle changes and take the nutritional supplements. And then there's ways to monitor the breast tissue and the ovaries that are non-invasive and don't use radiation, such as ultrasounds and thermography.
And that makes so much more sense. Now, when I wrote
this article that I posted called Breast Cancer Gene Preventive Surgery, you know, basically discussing what we're discussing today, and people can find that on my website. I do cite all of these studies, but I got a comment from a physician who said that diet only gives you 30% in terms of prevention against cancer overall. But the thing is,
he's wrong.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does say that.
I mean, there's so many studies. I just did an updated revised edition of my book, and there's been an explosion in research. And it was so much a bigger, task than I ever anticipated. And I added 150 pages to my book, and I have reviewed over 800 studies in it. And so I can tell you that there's so much research that shows if you do one thing, so you add one healthy thing to your diet, you cut your risk in half. And if you do more than one thing, those things will multiply up together as far as their protective effects. They don't add up together. They multiply up together. So the effect of diet is enormous, and it's way, 30% is ridiculous. I mean, because we have all these studies that show that one thing can influence it by 50% almost across the board. And, again, doing additional things together, you get synergistic effects where each one makes the other one more effective, and it multiplies the level of protection. So I completely disagree with that, and I've got hundreds of studies to back myself up on that.
I know that, and it does say it, however. He pointed me to the fact that that's what it says on the American Cancer Society's website.
Right.
It's wrong, and I think it's wrong as well. And then what about, Dr. Hoyner, the fact that they say, okay, so if you have your breast removed, then you're 85% less likely to have breast cancer. Well, I guess if you cut your heart out, you're less likely to have a heart attack. But how does that protect you from getting other kinds of cancer?
I love that. So, exactly. So, to me, it's a approach where it's like, okay, Western medicine is just so funny. It's like, if it hurts, cut it out. If it's damaged, cut it out. And I'm trained and certified in Ayurveda, the traditional system of medicine from India, which I just absolutely adore. It's about 5,000 years old. And, for me, it's a system of medicine that just makes so much common sense. And that is, would they picture a tree, and it's like, so when we have a disease, the Western approach is to be out there chopping at the, pruning the leaves and the branches, and the Ayurvedic approach is to be down watering the roots of the tree, and that, gives the support and life to the full tree. And so it's really understanding, a different kind of paradigm of medicine and how the human body physiology is, and that is that there's things that we can do, and they're simple, as far as, eating more plants, doing some brisk walking, going to bed, by 10 o'clock, simple things that you can do that greatly enhances your body's inner healing intelligence, hence the title of my book, and it gives you robust, wonderful health. So cutting your breasts off does not equate into robust, radiant health. And yeah, so, and then the side benefits of that is that...
Well, hold on one second, Dr. Horner, because we're just going to take our first little short break, and we're going to play the Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we're going to give very specific information, including specific supplements and essential vitamins that you recommend that should be incorporated into everyone's cancer prevention diet. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once more to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which is right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always find us at prn.fm. And you can find all the wonderful shows that are played here for your education as well as entertainment. You just know more if you are a Progressive Radio Network listener. And today we have as our guest a medical doctor, Dr. Christine Horner, who is nationally known surgeon, speaker, and the author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. And is that the book, Dr. Horner, that you said was just revised and re-released?
Yes. So that's going to be coming out in October. So it's, you know, up to date, hot off the press of all the latest research. Yeah.
And that is just excellent information. And you're saying that perhaps even, first of all, you shared with us to recap that the BRCA1 gene is a common gene, everyone has it, but the mutation is very rare, which is the mutation that Angelina Jolie found when she got the test done. And then we are questioning if, I'm not putting her down, if she wanted to make the decision to have that done, you know, I would never question somebody's decision, just like with religion, you know, even if it's not my religion, I wouldn't question it. What I really took, I would say, a negative view about is the fact that it was played up so much by the media. For instance, you know, Dr. Oz said, oh, she's so brave. So in other words, wow, you know, if you do this too, you're a brave, wonderful woman. I don't get that.
Well, you know, here's the thing is that we don't know Angelina Jolie's full medical history. And so, you know, when you look at a decision about what you're going to do if you're diagnosed with the BRCA1 gene, it's a very individual decision. And it could be maybe she had multiple breast biopsies done in the past that show pre-malignant disease. We don't know that. We don't know all the other compounding risk factors that could be there. And the other thing that's just really an enormous issue is that when a woman has watched her mother die, you know, she went through a 10-year battle with ovarian cancer. It's extremely traumatic, you know, to the daughter. And she watched her mother die at an early age. Her aunt, you know, just died of breast cancer. And here she is with six children. So what understandably happens is that some women develop so much fear about developing the cancer that every day they wake up and they think, is this the day that it's going to get me? And that fear becomes completely incapacitating for them. And it doesn't matter if you say, hey, you can reduce your risk by, you know, this amount, by doing this and doing that. You still can't eradicate that fear. So sometimes that plays such a big role that if you do surgery on those women, it gives them their life back because now they can relax and now they're not, you know, having that overshadow of fear every day. And I definitely know that that was, you know, one of the issues for them because I heard a you know, Brad Pitt interviewed recently, and so the words out of his mouth is like, now we don't have that shadow over us every single day. So, you know, that shouldn't be minimized as far as that emotional component for it. So I know she didn't go into that decision haphazardly or, you know, that it's a very, very difficult decision, but you have to weigh so many different factors into deciding what's the best thing to do. But I think the important message is it's not the only option. There are very viable options of, you know, doing some diet and lifestyle and supplements that can dramatically lower the impact and get the risk down to something where your chances of not getting it are much, much greater than ever getting it.
But back to the question, if you do choose, like Angelina Jolie did, to have a double mastectomy, does that reduce your risk of getting other kinds of cancer?
Of course not. In fact, you know, what's done sometimes, like the incidence of ovarian cancer is 50%. And so sometimes, you know, what they recommend is, oh, you get your ovaries taken out, and that's going to reduce your risk of breast cancer. Well, the research shows that it only reduces your risk of breast cancer by 50%. Well, guess what? You know, like turmeric reduces your risk by 50%. I mean, I'd rather, you know, take turmeric than have my ovaries taken out. But as you, you know, we had talked about before the break is that, you know, if you take your breasts out, it's not affecting your overall health. It's out there, you know, pruning the leaves from the tree. And really the smart approach is to understand what are those things that you need to avoid because they are disease-promoting and what are those things that you need to favor because they're health-promoting and you know, change your whole physiology so that you've got some radiant health going on, which, you know, gives you more energy and more joy and all sorts of wonderful side benefits to it, as well as reducing your risk of all sorts of different chronic diseases, including cancers.
Right. It just seems to be a much better approach. Now, you know, it's very interesting because if we just look at the politics of this, it's questionable also because the FDA has become much more aggressive in terms of, let's say, supplement companies making any claim or even having someone like yourself giving testimonials. They're not allowing that. So if you were, you know, let's say to discuss a particular brand of supplement or even a particular supplement and they had your beautiful picture on the website you saying, you know, Dr. Horner says that, and they are not even allowing studies on the website.
Right.
If it has a word in the study saying, you know, decreases cancer 50%, even if that's in the name of the study, they're not allowing it to be shown. So how are people supposed to find out about this?
Exactly. You know, it's an amazing situation that we have where, You know, we are controlled by big business, and that's, you know, pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies, and our government is owned by them, basically. And you can see where there's just a tremendous amount of corruption, you know, within our government, and this is just one of the fallouts of it. So it's, you know, completely absurd, but it's all about, you know, supporting the economy of the drug companies. So, you know, it does make it difficult, but, you know, there's people out there like me that can write books about it, and you know, doing interviews like this is like,
as of now, that's why I think we really actually have to be diligent to maintain our right of free speech. Like, as of now, we can talk about it on the radio and write books about it.
Right.
They're really becoming absurd. I mean, I wrote an article about echinacea, and I quoted studies showing that both the incidence and severity of colds and flus was decreased by the use of echinacea, and it said that in the study, and they said there's no way we can show anyone that study, you know, in terms of any place that's selling echinacea.
Wow. You know, Dr. Oz is definitely including information on, you know, herbs and nutritional supplements and on his show. So
that's true. That's true.
I don't know.
We're still able to do it on air.
We'll
worry about that. But it's wonderful that your new book is, or that your book is being revised and re-released. Now, what about a very interesting question that we have for you that might make some people happy is in terms of caffeinated coffee. What is the effect of coffee on the BRCA gene?
I just absolutely love this fact because when I, you know, talk to audiences in particular, I'm telling them, okay, you got to give up all your junk food and, you know, do plant-based diet. And they're like, ooh. I'm like, wait a minute, you'll love me now. So, you know, what's interesting is caffeinated coffee, which has been villainized in the past, is, you know, because it does have some, you know, negative effects as far as on our adrenals and our bones and so forth, but it's not all bad. And, in fact, what the research shows is that people who drink caffeinated coffee have a much lower incidence of a variety of different kinds of diseases, from Parkinson's and, you know, Alzheimer's and diabetes and so forth. But the interesting thing is, in its relationship with breast cancer. So women who have fibrocystic disease, you know, have been told, oh, don't drink caffeinated coffee. And so there was a myth, I guess, or, you know, out there about thinking that caffeinated coffee was a contributor to breast cancer. But, in fact, what the research shows is that caffeinated coffee, of all the, you know, different substances, you know, out there, it seems to have one of the largest effects at reducing breast cancer, particularly for women with the BRCA1 gene. So women, I mean, this is just such odd statistics, but 1 to 3 cups a day reduces your risk by 10%. 4 to 5 cups a day reduces the risk by 25%, and more than 6 cups a day reduces the risk by 70%.
Well, more than 6 cups a day, I don't know how that's going to affect your sleep. We'll talk about that.
Well, you know, this is what I, you know, say. So we have, you know, this thing, oh, I shouldn't be drinking coffee, but, you know, again, I really encourage people to tap into their own body's, you know, intuition and how things feel in your body, because we're not all the same. So certain things, you know, are fine in certain people, and the same things are not fine in other people. And so if you drink coffee and it makes you crazy, don't drink it. But if you drink coffee and you love it and you don't have any negative, you know, side effects to it, then you don't need to worry so much about it being bad for you, because the research, in fact, shows that it's got some health benefits, particularly when it comes to breast cancer.
We can upgrade that experience by using organic coffee, which does not have pesticides and herbicide residues, using a brown filter instead of a white filter, because a white filter is made white with dioxin. Yeah. So we can do that. That's what I do. Okay, I use organic coffee, I use a brown filter, and I use really clean water, and that's completely different than something you grab in a deli in a styrofoam cup.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's really good. That's a good fact. And I have read, and I think people do know, even listeners to this station, because I know Gary Null he's not a fan of coffee. So they hear a lot of negative stories about coffee. But there's two sides to the story. And, of course, coffee is truly an herb, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, and I think this is a good example that points out that our foods aren't, you know, black and white. You know, they're more gray. So there's health benefits and there's health detriments in a variety of different things. And there's a an old Ayurvedic kind of legend that has the teacher, the Vaidya, who says to his students, you know, go out and find me something that's not a medicine. And so all the students come back, and they're all, you know, demonstrating certain things. And then one of the students said, I didn't bring anything back because at any given time, anything potentially could be a medicine. And he said, you are right. So it's looking at things, you know, a little bit differently, where it's not like, oh, this is good, like the soy controversy, this is good or this is bad. And in fact, you know, there's both things can be true, where, you know, there can be health benefits, but there can also be some other, you know, side effects to it, too, at the same time.
Yes, that's true. And that's something why people can look into it a little more. Now, do you know about green tea? Does green tea have a protective effect as well?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, of all the health drinks, you know, green tea is definitely one of the stellar health drinks, and it inhibits the growth of at least 11 different kinds of cancers. It has so many different other, you know, health benefits to it, and noted for its very high antioxidants and anti-inflammatory effects. It's a COX-2 anti-inflammatory, which we know has an effect of reducing the risk of breast cancer by 50% when you knock out the COX-2 enzyme, and lots of great synergistic effects. So you combine that with turmeric, for instance. They found that green tea will enhance the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by 3 times, and turmeric enhances the anti-cancer effects of green tea by 8 times. So green tea is absolutely wonderful, and you need to just make sure that you're drinking organic, because, you know, they found pesticide, you know, residue on it if you don't. And usually the brands from a Japanese are better than China, because China doesn't have the, you know, kind of regulatory effects on that are necessary to make sure that there's not any toxic things that have been added to it. Yeah.
Now, also a question I get a lot, and I'm interested in your take, in terms of green tea, is in terms of the fluoride content. Of course, green tea does have naturally occurring fluoride. But I'm not sure that that's been linked to any negative effects. But a lot of people in the anti-fluoride movement, you know, that's a different fluoride. That's stannous fluoride. That's added to water supplies.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting to me about how certain, you know, there's like some concept that comes up and people get all bent out of shape, you know, about it, like even in binders, you know, that are put in certain supplements. Oh, I would never take that. And it's like, you know what? It's like you're finding things in these minuscule amounts that really aren't harmful. I mean, you should be looking at things that, you know, where we have really great data, you know, showing that it's, you know, something that you should avoid because there's huge statistical influence versus something that's, you know, just kind of, you know, not even, you know, worth discussing because it's such a small amount, or the form of it, as you described, is not one that's, you know, dangerous. So, you know, what I always encourage people to do is, like, let's look at the effect that it has in the human body and the overall effect of it, rather than looking at, you know, oh, this is in the laboratory petri dish or something. It's like, well, what's the effect when a human consumes it? Well, we've had thousands of years of looking at what the effects of drinking green tea are, and you know, and we know that people who drink a lot of green tea have significant health benefits, a lot lower incidence of digestive cancers and breast, prostate, and colon cancer, and, you know, numerous other health benefits. So that is really our real test.
Well, that's excellent. So we're going to take one more little break here, and then we're going to continue our discussion and talk about the top 3 foods for cancer prevention overall, and also about sleep, because we brought it up just briefly, and we'll go into it in greater detail. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you.
are back once again right here to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us. We love to hear from you. So go to naturalnurse.com where you can check out our schedule. Join us on ground at a lecture or join us online at an herbal certification course where you can get a certificate after 5 hours of study. Or join us at our up-and-coming conference, which is October 4th, sponsored by Stony Brook University and the University of Bridgeport. And it is called Natural Therapies, and it's evidence-based natural therapies. So that's something that you certainly may want to join us. It's for a full day. And that is on Friday, October 4th, for both professionals and the community. And today we have as our guest Dr. Christine Horner, nationally known surgeon, author, and her book is going to be out. It's out now, and she has an updated version coming out called Waking the Warrior Goddess. What a wonderful name. Of course, it's for men, too, but I would say mostly women are going to buy this book in terms of their warrior goddess, but we certainly can share that with our male companions because the information really is for everyone. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Horner.
No, it's my pleasure.
Now, also, the best place to find you after the show would be at your website, drchristinehorner.com, right? You have a lot of information
correct,
there.
That, yeah, Christine is C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, and my last name is H-O-R-N-E-R, so drchristinehorner.com, yeah.
Okay, and if anyone has trouble finding that, just go to Natural Nurse on the Progressive Radio Network archive, and we do have Dr. Christine Horner's show posted. It will be up there in about a day or so, and you can listen to it anytime from wherever you are, and also her contact information will be listed there on the bio. So let's talk about sleep a little bit, because I think that is an underused and certainly all-natural technique for increasing overall health and wellness, as well as having cancer prevention effects.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So it's pure medicine. And what they found is if we go to bed by 10 o'clock and get up by 6 o'clock, those are the optimal hours for us to sleep. So not only is it important the number of hours, but the absolute hours. And the reason is because we have hormonal fluctuations that occur throughout the day and throughout the night. If we go to bed by 10 o'clock, they're optimal. If we go to bed after 10 o'clock, they're not. And particularly if you stay up to midnight. There's a spike in melatonin, our sleep hormone, that will occur if you go to bed by 10 o'clock, and you don't want to miss that because if you do, the consequences are absolutely spectacular. Melatonin is a powerful antioxidant, regulates our estrogen in our body, and also stimulates the immune system. So when it's flattened, all of those functions are inhibited, and so what we find is that the incidence of breast cancer starts to rise. Women who work the night shift, the worst violators, have at least a 50% higher incidence of breast cancer. The longer they work the night shift, the higher the incidence is. And not only that, but we find other hormones, you know, everything's kind of interrelated. And so what the research shows is if you consistently stay up to midnight, your risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity is twice as high if you'd gone to bed earlier. So the recommendation, if you're night out, is to go to bed 15 minutes earlier every week. So you naturally train your body to start going to bed earlier and get the medicines of pure sleep. So the other thing that's really interesting is melatonin, our sleep hormone. You know, they find different interactions all over the body. That's the fascinating thing about the human body is that we'll find that there's, you know, hundreds if not thousands of different actions, so we can't reduce it and just saying this is what it does. So they found melatonin receptors in the pancreas on the beta cells, so that shows us that that's associated with diabetes. They found melatonin influences the BRCA1 gene, so there's a direct effect on that gene. So and we also know there's hundreds of other interactions, but just to specifically, you know, point that out too.
Well, how does the amount of light interfere with sleep? Because I noticed I moved recently, and right outside my window, there's sort of a big street light
that I cannot turn off, obviously, because it's not,
yeah.
not my problem.
So light, you know, melatonin is very sensitive to light, and so you have to have your room as dark as you possibly can or else it blunts the spike in melatonin. Yeah, very good point. Keep your room dark, no night lights, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And most people have a computer in their room or a clock
in their
room.
Take all that stuff out. Yeah, because the EMF, you know, too, from the computer and electrical devices, the things that dampens, you know, the melatonin as well. So, you know, you want your room dark, all your electrical stuff out of it, you know, make it a peaceful womb.
Well, and, you know, one of the things I did, with, besides sort of getting shades that I can pull down to block that light from outside, is there any evidence that wearing one of these dark black sleeping masks can be useful?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's something that you can absolutely do. That's helpful, yeah.
Because I did that, too, and there's different kinds. And one is interesting in that it doesn't push in on your eyelashes, so you're able to actually, you know, have the sleep fluttering effect.
Yeah,
yeah, so I've tried all
so,
these things. You know, you hear about them, and that's one of the things that I have done all these years. I've been in natural medicine since 1964, and it's a constant learning process, and it's, you know, taking these things in, but at the same time not worry about it. Just take positive action. Instead of worrying so much about getting breast cancer, if you do get a positive test, well, look at all these things that Dr. Christine Horner is saying that have been completely certified to vastly decrease your risk. You do not have to do something.
Yeah, and one thing that I really like to emphasize for folks is that, you know, changing diet and lifestyle, we know, is really tough. So there's this horrible statistic that 90% of people that have had a heart attack in the United States go back to the original diet and lifestyle 1 year. It's very tough. And what I, you know, want to really encourage folks and always kind of put this message out there is that we have so much good evidence that if you take some dietary supplements to start with, that they do have a huge effect. And so the simple, I mean, I have like certain ones that I think are really crucial for people
well,
to
tell
take.
Us,
like
tell
the
us.
Okay. So like omega-3 fatty acids, absolutely everybody should be taking it as a supplement because it has so many unbelievable health benefits and helps all of our cells to function optimally, not only reduces your risk of cancers, but helps in every single disease condition. Our immune system is something that's incredibly important for keeping us well. It has all the cells in it that go and look for foreign invaders and cancer cells and takes care of it. And our immune system can get slugged, you know, from toxins, staying up too late at night and a variety of other things. And so one thing that you can do to kind of give yourself an insurance policy around your immune system is to take mushrooms. And my particular favorite mushroom formula is called AHCC, and it's made from a variety of medicinal Japanese mushrooms. Great research on it where the way that they make it, the molecules are really small, so we absorb it into our system better than some of the natural mushrooms that have these big molecules. But what the research shows is that it supports every single cell in our immune system. So even if you're under stress or even if you like eat some toxic stuff, you've got the support of your immune system so it doesn't totally tank out. And what the research shows is that people who take it on a consistent basis have a much lower incidence not only of breast cancer, but multiple different kinds of cancers. If you get cancer, your survival statistics are a lot better with it. The next is turmeric. So the Indian spice turmeric has 5,500 studies on it now, and it's the number one anti-cancer spice. It almost seems miraculous in its abilities to help combat cancers. It inhibits the growth of 17 different kinds of cancers. Very powerful antioxidant, very powerful COX-2 anti-inflammatory, and so I think that that's a very important thing to have every day. You can cook with it or you can take it as a supplement. And then vitamin D. There's been so much research on vitamin D in the last several years showing that we're chronically low in vitamin D, and vitamin D acts as a hormone in our body and affects really hundreds and hundreds of different genes that have to do with cancer as well as other functions in our body, and now they're finding finding that there's an association of low vitamin D with almost every chronic disease, from multiple sclerosis to Alzheimer's. I mean, you just name it, it's low vitamin D. So that's another one where you take vitamin D supplements. There's lots of research showing it cuts your risk of breast, prostate, and colon cancer in half. So those are some of the basic ones, real simple. You know, anybody can take a pill or a supplement like this, and you're giving yourself some great protection. The word supplement means it's actually supposed to be supplementing our good diet and lifestyle, but at least you get yourself some protection, omega-3s, vitamin D, AHCC, and turmeric. And then, and there's other ones, you know, that you can take equally healthy, but, you know, then what you want to do is start making these diet and lifestyle changes. Get friends and family to help and support each other in that so that you don't slide back into unhealthy habits, because, you know, health is such a precious thing. It's really the most important thing. If you're, you know, sick, it, you know, just kind of takes everything out of your life. And so, you know, I believe that we were here to experience joy and to express, you know, the missions and passions that we have in this lifetime. And we can only do that when we're, you know, have full, robust health. And so it's crucially important to take care of yourself, and the payoff is tremendous.
Right. And like you said, you know, if people know they're going to go to a wedding or a special family event, they can plan on taking that day off. It's the habit. It's not the occasional thing. What goes on all week? And so I want to thank you so much for being our guest here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Our listeners, you can contact Dr. Christine Horner at Dr. Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Horner, H-O-R-N-E-R.com. She has tons of excellent information on her website, and there's articles there, and you can always contact us at naturalnurse.com. And thank you so much for being listeners right here on Progressive Radio Network. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, and I'm hoping that you stay healthy.